Well, hi, everybody. My name is Heather. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, can you not hear me? Is that better? Is that a little bit better? my sobriety date is March 17th of 2012. So that is St. Patrick's Day. However, I did not know it at the time. I do have a sponsor. And I have sponsees. My home group is a women's group on Friday, the TGIF meeting in Walk Hill, New York. And I'm from New Paltz, New York, which is about 75 miles north of the city. So it's pretty crazy I'm here. I see some sample newsletters here, and my boyfriend, well, now fiancé, I know I got proposed to here in Atlanta. Like, life is so good. Yeah, so this is, like, crazy good. he was like, you need to bring copies of your newsletter. It's so unique, and it's amazing. I'm like, oh, no. So he was right, which is something I can say today. You know, thanks, everybody, for being here. I got my posse, which is always good. My sponsor's here, which is amazing, and what a gift AA really has truly been in my life. I've been struggling through AA many, many years. I was first introduced to what AA was in 1987. And so it wasn't until 2012 when, you know, through the course of those 24 years, whatever it was, I would make cameo appearances, you know, and things would kind of be rough and people were on my case, I'd pop in and do a quick cameo, and then out I would go. So at the end, totally desperate, ready to kill myself fully, you know, I'd hit bottom, and there was two choices. I was either going to live or die, and that was it. There was no other option. So I chose to live, and I'll give it a chance, and if it doesn't work out, well, I can always go back. So my first sponsor, Lillian, she had known me through the course of my little ins and outs of AA, and she came to my rescue and scooped me up out of the gutter, and started me on this journey of my recovery, my sobriety, and so she began to take me through the steps, which I had never done previously. Why would I? I wasn't done drinking. So she did. She began to take me through the steps, and I was able to be introduced to a power greater than myself, which is an ongoing process of getting to know this incredible friend. And that's just unbelievable that AA has led me to a higher power. And by the time I got through my eighth step is where I really could feel an internal total shift in my entire being. Because at the beginning of my eighth step, I was like, I can't even fathom writing these names down. I am so disgusted and mortified at these people. They don't even deserve to be written down on a piece of paper. Well, by the end of my eighth step, I was totally willing. And talk about a psychic change occurring, to actually physically be able to feel at this moment, that moment, a total shift internally in every fiber of my being. And I could not believe what was happening. I just wanted to like be like, oh my gosh, it works. It really works. I can't believe I never thought this would happen. And it was, I could feel it. I could really feel it. And my ninth step, which is still ongoing, but the major ones of the family, the ones that I love the most and hurt the most, were the first in my ninth step. And I proceeded to do that. It was extremely difficult. So I did the step work and went through the steps and started sponsoring. Because my sponsor said to me, she goes, I'm only going to sponsor you, number one, if you will be willing to sponsor other women. So I was like, what? I said, well, you know, I want to stay sober. So am I going to do it or am I not? Am I in or am I out? So I said, yes. Okay, let's do it. So I'm going to meetings. I've got a sponsee. I think the other one came a little later on. And I'm starting to take her through the steps, how the steps were taught to me. So the course of this, my sponsor at the time said, hey, listen, I got an assignment. It's bring your sponsee to the district meeting day. I was like, what? Go where? To what meeting? I never heard of that. So, here I'm like a year sober, a little over a year sober, and this woman saved my life. So I said, fine, I'll help you complete your project, you know, being the star sponsee, doing all my step work, not getting in relationships, you know, showing up in meetings, chairing. I was chairing a big book meeting for 2 years. I couldn't get out of that position. I'm like, what about the spirit of rotation? I hear that. So lo and behold, I'm like, all right. So I mosey on into this district meeting, and our DCM at the time is actually here. Hi, Jeannie. Yeah. So what an incredible operation she ran, boy, in DCM. So I'm sitting at this district meeting, and it's going on, and I'm like, whatever, lollygagging, just sitting there thinking I'm just, you know, helping my sponsor complete her assignment. So they talk about a newsletter editor position, and Lillian says, oh, well, I nominate Heather. I look up, and I stood up in the meeting, and I said, hold everything. What are you talking about? Because I am comfy, cozy, just doing what I'm doing, staying sober, not drinking, going to meetings. I'm sponsoring. I'm working steps. I'm like chairing a big book meeting. What are you talking about? I can't do it. So the DCM said, wonderful. Everybody's like, yes, agreed. She's in. She's in. And I'm like, and so I'm having this internal dialogue. I don't know what this is about. I am fearful because I'm uneducated in this approach. I have no clue what this means. I'm going in blindly. And then I thought, am I in or am I out? Am I willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I said, fine, I'll do it. You know, I know I'm not alone. I have a DCM who is there to support me. There was somebody who did this previously who would certainly help me. And I had a sponsor at the time who was standing by my side. So I said, you know what? This is going to keep me sober. Let's do it. So off I went, creating this template of this newsletter. Now, I don't know if you all know Facebook. Horrible. I don't know what to do. I try posting. My aunt's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, how do you know what I did? So I don't even know how to operate stuff like this. So Microsoft Publishing, did anybody ever hear of that? I was introduced to Microsoft Publishing, and I started to have a lot of fun. So now I'm not only attending district meetings, now I'm introduced to something called the area. What? What, there's more? So I remember going to my first fellowship day in our area, and I was asked to speak on a panel. And I'm like, what are you all talking about? It was on the sixth step. So I had to go. So, of course, I showed up just before the panel started and figured I'd just do my little 10-minute spiel and then out of there. Well, something happened at that fellowship day, and I was like, wow, this is service. This is how you feel. These are people who are sober. My world of recovery just opened up exponentially. And I had this heightened level of wanting more. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to grow more. And I said, this is the ticket. This is the secret. I can't believe I hadn't known about this, you know, but I really wasn't ready. So that was my introduction to area. And from that point on, I started going to every district meeting, every area event, forums, assemblies, and just completely crazy excited. Like there was like, what's wrong with her? And what happened with my newsletter along the way was I started, as I was going to groups in my district, I would write down whose anniversaries, how many years they're celebrating. Right away I started to incorporate a gratitude list because I was so incredibly grateful. I could not believe that I was pulled out of the gates of hell and still sober and standing and walking. I became employable. All this stuff was happening at such a late stage in life. And so I was like, let me make a gratitude list in my newsletter. And I said, I'll ask for if anybody wants to add something, I'll put that in. So every month I would have 10 different things to be grateful for. And my newsletter was not black and white. It was kind of made like a coloring book for a three-year-old. There were pictures of puppies and hearts and flowers with colored borders. There was not anything black and white in my newsletter. And I'll tell you something else. I cannot read, write, or spell very well. My mother is a PhD in English and totally enabled me my whole life. I didn't read a book till grad school. So here I am with this newsletter, and every month I have a theme. So I'm like, oh, I can create a theme. So I'm becoming like excited about this. And there are some submissions and stories, success stories. I learned that I could get the minutes from my district meeting emailed to me and incorporate that in the newsletter, add events from the area into the newsletter. And so along the way, I went to my second area event and met the area newsletter editor. I was like feeling like I was going to meet a rock star. Honest to God, she's here today, Linda, my mentor. Thank you. I was like, because I would get her newsletter, and I'm like, whoa, this is so cool. And she inspired me to add things and change things into my newsletter. And so that's what I did. So it's a two-year commitment, and I was like, wow, 2 years. Okay, that means I have to stay sober for 2 years a day at a time. Just like I was ended up chairing this Big Book meeting for 2 years a day at a time. Learning about what happens at the district level, the area level, and there's so much more. I actually started reading the service manual. What? Yeah, so life has been incredibly amazing. And since sponsoring, we've been without a DCM in our district for almost 2 years. And I've actually sort of fell into the role, sort of taking over and going to the area events because nobody was going and doing the newsletter. So everybody wanted me to become the DCM. And I'm like, but the service manual says it's 5-year minimum, you know, recommended length of sobriety. I don't have that. So I was like, well, you know, maybe I should do it. Maybe I should do it when my 2 years of the newsletter is up. And what happened was through sponsoring, what my first sponsor did for me, my sponsee is now going to be taking over the newsletter editor position. So by taking a buddy along through service and showing them what I know just passes along what AA, why AA keeps going on and on and on, and it's handed down where we teach somebody one position, they teach their, you know, our sponsee something, and then when they sponsor, so on and so forth. And I was getting it. I was like, oh my gosh, I get it. GSRs. I love GSRs, and I'm so excited. I'm not going to be the DCM. I'm going to be the alternate DCM. I have somebody with much more experience who's going to be the DCM. And I'm like, I'm going to be right there beside you. I want to go to groups in our district where there's not representation and let them know what this incredible program is all about and the service part of our triangle. So I have to say, you know, with a little over 3 years sober, I'm beyond incredibly grateful. My life is so blessed on every level, from my 22-year-old to my sobriety, my sponsees, my new sponsor, my job. I love my job. I get up and go to work and hop out of bed and love it most of the time. And I remember getting this crazy email about the international convention. It was so funny. I brought my passport to travel, and my boyfriend goes, oh, what, just because it's an international convention, you need a passport? I'm like, look, I'm cool. I have a passport. I'm going to use it to go to Atlanta. So know, so I remember I was like having this awful day at work and this email comes in. Oh yeah, do you want to volunteer? I'm like, yeah, you know, I was a monitor at our area convention. I was like, yeah, I'll help people, direct people, do stuff. And the email comes up, oh, do you want to speak on a panel? I'm like, crazy. What are they talking about? I'm a little over 3 years sober. So they said, yeah, we've chosen you to speak on a panel. Like for the, I'm like, how do they know I'm a newsletter editor? How do they even know that? So, it was pretty cool. And I sent them, my background, the story I told you, and it's really an honor to be here, the 80 years of AA at my first international convention, newly engaged with my posse from New York and California. Where's our other California? Oh, she's out. So, you know, you're there, yeah. So God bless everybody. I love you all. Thank you so much.
She's cute, huh? I think I'm going to take her back to... When you get married, you guys want to move to California? Santa Barbara?
We need a DCM.
Okay. Just saying. Nothing personal, just saying. Sorry, that was Heather's timer. She was right on time. You know, today is 4th of July, as we all know. And I don't know how many of you are aware that at the United States Capitol, that there is an AA meeting. Has anybody been to that meeting? I've been to that meeting. We're the only country in the world that actually has an AA meeting at the very heart of its country, where the decisions are made every day about the quality of our lives. We have Betty Ford to thank for that. It's an amazing meeting. They used to just let you in. You would go up to the guards and you would just say nays and yays, and they would let you in, which of course is how they vote on the House floor. You are a guest of the Speaker of the House of the United States of America. They give you a pin, and these pins are all over the world. These pins are all over the world of diplomats and secretaries and congresspeople and world leaders and their crew that come to the United States on business and go to an AA meeting at the very heart of the Capitol of the United States of America. I think that's pretty impressive. And, of course, you all know that our big book is inducted in the Library of Congress in 2012. Is everybody aware of that? You should go see that. That's pretty impressive. It was inducted for its humanitarian contribution in the world. It is one of 88 books that is inducted into the Library of Commerce for its humanitarian contribution to the world. Love and tolerance, folks. Proud to be a member of this organization. Thank you very much. Our next speaker is going to be my good friend and my partner in management, Kim W. from Mesa, Arizona.
My name's Kim. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's June 4th, 1987. I got sober in Mesa, Arizona. My home group's Road to Recovery. And that's where I'm at right now. My current service position is I am third string cake lady at my home group.
Third string.
It's a very important service position. I'm proud of that. Yeah, is it hot in here or I'm just nervous? Oh, my God, both. I did bring some newsletters. They make great fans if you're all hot. There's some up here. I don't know if I can do a whole 20 on newsletters, so you just get a little qualify. You know, I have been ready for this program all my life, I think. I like everybody else, never felt like I fit in. Was always a little different. There were some signs when I was young. I remember when I was young, on TV at Easter, the only thing that was on TV was the Ten Commandments, right? And we'd watch it every year. And my favorite part was when Moses went up to the mountain and everybody was having that big party. And they were, like, drinking and having orgies, and they were just carrying on. And I thought, man, that looks like fun. But I knew that it wasn't supposed to, you know. It wasn't supposed to be an appealing thing, but to me it was. That was a little off. I can't remember my first drink. I come from one of those families that if the baby was fussy, they'd give it a little booze in the bottle, so I suspect that might have been it. Later on, I learned from friends and cousins how to make, we'd make homemade hooch out in the barn and drink that. You get a 5-gallon bucket and you put some fruit in there and a loaf of bread and you put the lid on, and when it blows off, you scrape off the scum and you drink it. And it works. Yeah, normal teenagers don't do that. I found out later, normal teenagers don't do that. But when I was doing that, I had arrived. I was okay. I was okay with me and everybody else. I drank at every opportunity I could. I dated this one kid because his dad had a very well-stocked liquor cabinet. I really didn't like him, but there were perks. So I pretty much drank every chance I got. Remember, I had this pea coat. I could go to the liquor store and put a quart on the inside pockets, each inside pocket. And, you know, I would steal booze or do whatever I had to get it. When I got into high school, I discovered some other things, too. Other things and other people that I seemed to fit right in with. I would go on long drinking binges and doing other things. And I remember when I was 17, I'd been on a particularly long, awful bender and was feeling the effects. And I just thought my life was so empty and hollow and there's got to be something better than this. And the answer came to me, the only answer that I had ever been exposed to, because I had never heard of recovery. You know, people like me don't quit drinking. That's not the problem anyway. I grew up in a very rural southern Illinois, born and raised farming community. And there the answer is, you know, you're raised that you grow up and you find a nice man and you get married and you settle down and then everything's fine. So I remember that day clearly, making that decision to go find a nice man and hook up with him and settle down and everything would be fine. I was looking for an answer. It was the best one I could come up with. So I found one. He had a job and a car, and that was much better than the guys I'd been dating. I thought I'd really raise my standards there. So he seemed nice. So I hooked up with him, and he drank like I did because, you know, you got to drink like me or I'm not hanging out with you. And it was a match made in, depending on the point of my life I look at it, it was a match made in heaven. So I hooked up with this guy, and we moved in together, and he was kind of old-fashioned, and he didn't want his significant other working. He was going to be the supporter, and I thought, that's great. I can stay home and drink. Go to work. You go to work. I'll cook. It'll be great. We moved to Arizona, and, you know, we moved around the country a few times because I follow me. You know, I do the same thing wherever I'm at. And it always ends up the same. So, you know, we'd move again to greener pastures. And you know, one day I was really down again and thinking about it. And the answer came again. I'm just not settled down enough. I need to be married, and I probably need to have some kids. And that'll make it better. Yeah, so we did that. And, it worked for, you know, about 5 months, 5 minutes, I don't know. I wanted to be a good mom. Tried it a couple of times. I got a couple of kids. And, in the end, my drinking and my disease just, you know, it brought me so low that I'd look at my children and think you would be better off if someone else took you. Long periods of time would go by. I can't remember feeding them, you know, but they made it. Kids are tough. But it affected me deep down. That was not the person that I had ever intended to be in my life, you know. And I used to not sleep much, and I would watch TV, and all those commercials would be on, you know, the egg and the frying pan, and back in the 80s, all the treatment centers had commercials. And I'd call them up at night just so somebody would talk to me, you know. because nobody was talking. I didn't have any friends left. Nobody was talking to me. So I'd call him up, and every now and then it was probably one of us on the phone, and usually I'd want to tell him about what a rotten guy my husband was and how much he drank and how awful that was. And I'm pretty sure it was one of us when they would ask me, well, how are you? Do you drink? Yes, a little. And they'd want to talk about me. You know, they'd see through that. I've got a friend who's got a problem line. Yeah, I've got a husband who's got a problem. Every now and then we'd talk about me. And nobody had asked me about me in forever, maybe my whole life, I don't know. And it was really touching that these people on the phone that I didn't even know seemed genuinely concerned about my well-being. You know, it didn't sober me up right away, but it kind of let me know that, you know, maybe there's something out there that might improve my life. My husband was drinking, too. He was no peach. We're both alcoholics. And he came home one day and he said, hey, I need some help. You call those numbers a lot. Do you know where I could go? And I said, yeah, I think I do. So he ended up going to a treatment center. And I went, you know, with the families through the family program. And they were telling all the other families to go to Al-Anon. And, you know, I had told them a little bit about my life. And they told me to go to AA. And I was kind of offended because all the other families are going off to Al-Anon. So I called the number again, you know. Well, no, first I called my two remaining friends in the world trying to get somebody to go to the bar with me because I needed a babysitter to go drinking, I knew. I had no idea where I would end up if I went drinking. I was scared to go drink alone, and no one would go with me. They said, hey, you've been like, talking to those people down at that treatment center. Why don't you go check that out? And when my last drinking buddy in the world says, hey, why don't you go to an AA meeting? Yeah, it was pretty low. So I called up that number again, the local intergroup, and I got the closest meeting to my house, which was a little bit farther than the bar, so I figured that was going to any lengths, right? Because I was walking. And I went to this meeting, and I knocked on the door. Nobody answered. Pushed it open. And it was just this little white house in a bad part of town, which was, you know, an improvement to where I lived, so it wasn't any big deal. And I went in, and yeah, there was a bunch of bikers there, and I felt less than. I felt less than everybody there, really. I crawled under the door. And, you know, they welcomed me in, and I couldn't hear a lot because my head was screaming, and they gave me a half a cup of coffee. And I sat through a meeting and probably didn't hear anything. But I remembered the kindness, the keep coming back, that you're in the right place. And I felt like I knew them. I had been to one meeting before that. I was probably still a little lit. So, but I remember there was a speaker, and it halfway through his story, it seemed like I knew him from somewhere. I was trying to think where I knew him from because the story was so similar to mine, you know. So from the very beginning, Alcoholics Anonymous has grabbed me with the kinship, the fellowship of the Spirit. We're all the same here. And that treatment center that my husband was in, they had told me that I couldn't drink or do drugs while I was there. And I thought that they meant while I was physically there. I didn't know that they meant for the whole time I was going through this program. So I'd go home and do a little something and then go back and they'd ask me, oh, did you have a drink? And I'd say, well, you know, just a little one last night to sleep. And they'd get mad at me and I couldn't figure out why. And finally they drug me to the other room and they explained to me that, no, we meant the whole 30 days. And I was shocked. But my ego kicked in and I said, no problem. I can do that. Standing on my head, not a big deal. And yeah, to my shock, it was a big deal. It was a big, big deal. Just getting through a day with nothing. And that counselor who I was secretly terrified of handed me a huge resentment to keep me sober. I don't care what keeps you sober. Anything that gets you sober. If I'm sober today, I might find a better reason tomorrow. But she told me that that guy, that husband, had a better shot of staying sober than I did. She said, you don't have what it takes. And I knew there was a hook in it when she threw it out there, but I couldn't help myself. I grabbed the bait. Yeah. I'll show you who can stay sober. So off I go to meetings, and I know that I got to do this thing. I got to do everything that everybody's talking about, or I won't make it. And then she'll be right. So, and we can't have that. So I'd go to meetings, and the fog lifted, and I got a sponsor, and I started praying, and I was doing everything everybody was talking about. And I think I had like 90 days, and then I could chair a meeting, and I thought that was a great honor. Now I can chair a meeting. Well, my sponsor told me, hey, it's your turn, chair the meeting. And, I didn't realize that they just need people to chair meetings. But it was a great honor. It really is a great honor to chair a meeting or participate in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so honored and humbled to be here. This is way cool. And when my home group would have those group conscience meetings every month and service positions would come up, my sponsor would tell me, hey, it's your turn. You're going to be supply person, whatever it was. And I rotated through all those positions, and I was the GSR, and I was the intergroup rep, and I was the treasurer. Oh, my God, they trusted me with their money. Supply person. I'm very frugal. I'm not cheap. I'm frugal. I was going to save him a ton of money, and I went out and bought single-ply toilet paper and the cheapest coffee I could find. And I thought they were going to throw me out of the home group so bad. And they made me promise. They told me that we're alcoholics, but we do have standards. Okay. I got it. So those people in that treatment center, it amazed me that they thought that somebody like my husband could stop drinking and doing drugs and clean up his life and turn it around and live a normal, useful life. And that just amazed me, because everybody knows that people like us don't stop drinking. It talks about it in the big book. We just carry on to the bitter end as best we can, blotting out the reality of our existence. And I thought that that's what my life was, I was just amazed that people like us can change. Just people like me, people like us, all of us, that there is an answer for us. And, if there's any message in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's that there is an answer for us. And it's right here, and it's all together. And I just love being a part of you guys. What's my time? 31 seconds to talk about newsletters? Oh, my gosh.
They can read it. You brought some.
No. Yeah, and they make great pants. So, a few years ago, I found myself without a job. I've been pretty self-supporting through all of my sobriety, and I was without a job, and the intergroup was looking for a new office manager. And I thought, okay, well, I'll put in an app for that. There's no way I'm ever going to get it. And, oh, my gosh, they hired me to be their office manager. And it has been an amazing honor and an adventure. And I get up in the morning, and I love going to work. I do. I love working for Alcoholics Anonymous, for our local intergroup. It is an honor. And part of it, we have a newsletter editor, like Heather there is an editor, and she kind of puts it together, and then I put in the financials and stuff, because we use this as our information to our groups to keep them informed and involved and to be transparent and let them know about the finances. So we've got, full financials in here every month, as well as all the events and happenings that we know about. And we really try to use the newsletter to keep all the groups connected and involved in our area. And, Yeah, it's 12 pages. It's pretty good. I don't know how many subscriptions we have, but we mail out several, and we mail one every month to GSO, and they keep one on file. And I know they read it because one time they called us up and asked for source information on one of our articles. One of the service desks had read an article that they were going to use in a presentation. So I think most of these, a copy does end up at GSO, and they do get read there. It's very amazing. So, yeah, I'm down to the seconds. Hey, this has been real fun. I am so glad to be here. I am so glad you're all here. Thank you very much.
Yes, the one thing I can assure you is GSO reads the newsletters. I've had more than one call. I'm proud of that, by the way. We do get their attention. I've also had some members. We had a member write us a memo, an email not too long ago, last year. And she was very upset that that we were printing skewed AA prayers and opinions of members, and we were wasting money in color. And, you know, I wrote her back very kindly and said that, you know, we do it in color for a reason. It gets a lot of attention. It's well-read. We print 500 a month, and we get rid of 500 a month. But those AA prayers we often referred to, or those skewed AA prayers, well, you know, with the exception of 2, AA doesn't really have its own prayers. And those opinions by members we often refer to as experience, strength, and hope. So we'll print yours anytime. You just send it to our office, and we do a step tradition. It's of the month, and I do encourage you. We have people from all over the country that submit articles. I guarantee you GSO will read it. So with that, we are going to introduce Jim from Hawaii.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for being here. After walking down that long hall, I'm surprised you're all here. I want to thank the organizers, especially Eva Sanchez, who sent me this loving invitation for this opportunity. I received that invitation because I currently serve as the Minor Bird Chair in Area 17, which, as we noted already, is Hawaii. I want to talk specifically about our little paper in a few minutes, but first I want to review a couple other qualifications. I did write this out, so I hope you don't, I won't have a lot of eye contact. I have 20 minutes, from what I understand, to explain how miraculous it is that I'm standing here at all, talking about newsletters, our voice to the groups. My sobriety date is December 6, 2004. I'll be 68 years old 1 month from tomorrow. To save you from doing the math, that means I didn't get to Alcoholics Anonymous until I was 57 years old. And today marks the longest period of sobriety I've had since I was 14. Thank you all. I did all I could during my drinking career to avoid a relationship with this fellowship. The result was simply a continuation of the misery I suffered and caused those around me to suffer. All that changed after I reached that point we call the jumping-off point, and I received a call from my oldest daughter, who said she would arrange for me to go to rehab if I would. Since I was out of options, I surrendered to her plan. Several days later, I was detoxing on a plane back to Detroit. My counselor in the rehab in suburban Detroit was Doug P., a wonderful member of our fellowship. He had 3 copies of the Big Book in his office. He offered to loan me one while I was in rehab if I would read it. So I took the book, and I had 3 or 4 other guys around me, and we read the book from cover to cover. I came to believe that I might have a chance of sobriety if I could maintain a relationship with this fellowship that was so aptly described in the pages of that book. So from my point of view now, that at that point I was at step 3. So I came back to Kauai, and I called the number Doug had given me. I had told him while I was there at the rehab that I didn't even know if there was AA on Kauai. How would I know? Unfortunately, I couldn't get to a meeting that night, but I did call the number. And the following morning, I showed up at my first meeting on Kauai, Lydgate Park. It's a wonderful meeting called Hui Ohana, which means fellowship, family coming together is roughly the translation. The man who'd answered the phone the night before was at the meeting, came up and introduced himself to me, so I asked him to be my sponsor. We started the steps right after that. Just so happens he was also the GSR for that group. He needed an alternate, so he told me I was to be his alternate. I was 30 days sober. Area 17 is a funny place. It's the whole chain of islands, right? And the distance from Hilo in the south to Hanalei in the north is about 330 miles plus. And in between, there's an awful lot of water. There's no commercial boat service from our northern island to any of the other islands. So air transportation is the main means we have for getting to our assemblies. Okay, so that's our number one expense is the airfares. So, but what happens with that is that many members then start to view the privilege of representing their groups as a means of getting from one island to another. Seriously, it gets to be an issue because they don't. Sometimes we forget the spiritual principles which necessitate that expenditure. So it gets contentious, all right? And it's problematic to some degree for us. And then what happened in this particular group was my sponsor's a wonderful guy. He taught me an awful lot. But the group wasn't too happy with the fact that he didn't give them any reports. So they decided to send me to the assemblies. And that was, you know, I was 6 months sober, something like that. I've missed two assemblies since. One I was off island, and the second one in the beginning of panel 63, I decided to do something on locally. And so I missed the orientation assembly, but the secretary resigned at the orientation assembly. I stood for secretary at the next assembly, and I was secretary during panel 63. So then that when that panel ended, I put a note in the basket telling the chair-elect that I would do whatever she needed. A couple weeks later, I got a call from her, and she said my name was drawn for the hat to be the newsletter chair. So, and then Eva sends me this invitation to stand up here today. So it's clear, I hope, to everyone, certainly is to me, that my standing up here right now has a whole lot more to do with circumstances outside myself. This is not my idea. Now, I would add to that I'm a stubborn alcoholic, restless, irritable, discontented, and I have to learn from my experiences. I won't listen to anybody else. So, when I was GSR for that original group, they sold T-shirts. It was so frustrating for me as a GSR to talk about the ideal structure of an AA group as described in the pamphlet of the AA group. And no one there would volunteer for the various service positions, PI, CPC, any of those things. Couldn't get anything going. The discussion would come up about T-shirts, and everybody and their mother had their hand up and wanted to talk about the colors and the sizes and how much we're going to charge and where's the money going, on and on and on and on and on. Okay? So you can see I got a little upset with that. But my current home group, just a few months ago, David Morris happened to show up at my current home group. Now, as it turned out, the woman who was supposed to run the meeting that day called. Just as I'm pulling up, she calls me, says I'm not going to be down there today. So David Morris agrees to be the speaker. Now, for those of you who don't know, He just happens to be the non-alcoholic treasurer of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. And here he is, being the speaker at my little home group on the now Willie Willie Beach Harbor in Lihue, Hawaii. Why? Because tourism is the primary commercial endeavor in Hawaii. Tourists buy T-shirts. But more importantly for us, this is going to choke me up a bit, our visitors give us a depth and breadth to the fellowship that probably is not readily replicated in less visited areas. In other words, we get folks from all over coming all the time. And it's just, it's marvelous. What it does for our fellowship is indescribable. Okay? Now here's the second experience. I had this last year at the Hawaii State Convention. I picked up a former sponsee who happened to be in rehab over on Oahu. We went to a meeting at the convention. And these people were sharing about their home group, and they had what they call, they had a service position in their home group called the potluck coordinator. Okay? Now, you laugh. That's not mentioned in the AA group. But think about Hawaii, okay? If you come or if you've been, you're inundated with requests for this or that luau. They're big deals. And food's very important to us. Remember, yeah, I know everyone else too, but for us, Hawaii was populated by Pacific Islanders who came there in sailing canoes, and they had to bring all their staples with them. Because resources were scarce. And they were going to this, you know, piece of lava in the middle of the ocean. Because of the scarcity of their resources, when they had a meal, it was a big deal. And they all got together and did it together. So that's the way we do. And my home group's GSR, current GSR, had instituted a potluck every third Sunday and incorporated our business meeting with the potluck. That's the way we do our business meeting. So I went back and I said, I heard about this potluck coordinator. We didn't have one. So we had a coordinator. We got a coordinator. And she just happens to be, she's a big Hawaiian woman, and she's a marvelous lady. She's brought some new discipline. She really has. And what currently our business meetings are the best attended on Kauai. You ask it, there are a couple guys outside from Kauai. They were in here. They left. They said they don't. We don't hear him again. So my point is, it works for us. Okay, and that to me that's the heart of the matter. It works for us. The inquiry came from Eva about whether I would be willing to either chair or speak at this meeting. And, of course, I've been taught both by my sponsor and my experience that you don't say no to AA. I don't know what I need. We sort of seem to. So I said yes, and then the invitation came, and the topic was AA newsletters and bulletins, our voice to the groups. My response was, oh, no. That's backwards. That's got the triangle upside down. Okay. Now, so now what do I do? I had to do a little bit of soul searching, and I talked to my folks, my people I need, when I get to that point, and figured out that I gotta stand up here and tell my truth, because if I did otherwise, it wouldn't work too well. I know how that comes. People on Kauai get sober. We carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to the best of our ability, to those who still suffer, and we adapt to the circumstances we face to do it. We keep trying. And those of us whose imagination has been fired look for new and exciting ways to do it. When we're open-minded and willing, we use what we're given, and sometimes this means doing weird things like selling T-shirts and having a potluck coordinator. And it works for us. It really does. Furthermore, I've been struggling, like my predecessors, to try and encourage members to write articles for the Minor Bird, for our area newsletter. At PRASA this year, I handed out, PRASA is our Pacific Region Alcoholics Anonymous Service Assembly, you probably all have them. I handed out post-it notes from all the participants from Area 17, and they all said, Minor Bird article, just a reminder. I even gave one to our past Pacific Region trustee. At our orientation assembly, our current trustee told the members that the best advice he received when he first became a delegate was to remember that he had something to contribute. Now, I believe that's true of all of us. And that the most important thing to pass on to others is that same simple message. We can and should all contribute. After all, this is a fellowship when we share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. And this, to me, is the essence of the area newsletter. And not just the area, but the district newsletter as well. To share the experiences of our groups with one another so we may better practice our primary purpose, reaching out to those who still suffer. All the committees, any group who has practiced something unique should be encouraged to communicate that practice on as wide a scale as possible so others may learn from the experience and stay abreast of what's going on. Because sharing with one another is the heart of what we do. I have a few copies. Actually, it's supposed to be 25, but the first run got all kinds of lines in it, so they gave me those for free. So I got 50 copies, so take them. This is our newest issue. We only issue at points when there are committee meetings or assemblies. We don't have a mailing. We just do it by hand. Any of our newsletters, though, are available at area17a.org. Scroll down the bottom of the page, hit the Minor Bird, and former copies will come up. So you can get it online if you don't want to put it in your suitcase. But this copy has two pictures in it. Okay? One is a wheel used by the Kahana spinners on Maui. It's a means of choosing the topic for the meeting. The second one's from my home group, Happy Hour Kauai, which shows our Cinco de Mayo piñata. It's made in the shape of a circle and triangle. Okay? Now neither of these is earth-shaking. I mean, this is not the wind coming through Bill's hospital room. Okay? But they're small, creative things that we do that add to our gatherings. Okay? And I think they demonstrate we do have something to contribute. Okay? And as long as we keep doing what we're doing, our islands will be better off, and so will those who keep coming back. I want to close with a quick reference to the most recent issue, Box 459. It showed up about 10 days ago. There's a quote in the article about the General Service Conference's inventory. It's on page 4, and it says, "We can't have a democratic organization without having the top of the pyramid fully participating." We know the groups are out there, and people are discovering a new way of living by utilizing our 12 steps. All we do is look around here today, or even better yet, last night, and we can see the fruits of that. Utilizing our various newsletters and constantly reviewing their contents is one sure way to recognize the particulars of this work. Thank you again for allowing me this miraculous opportunity for growth.